Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
Yom Teruah. Okay, this is our Feast of Trumpets, also Feast of Great Shouts. We have in our Torah portion, which isn't really a Torah portion, it's actually just a small section. We're reading at different parts of our Torah. Those of you who were here last year, we covered a particular aspect of Yom Teruah, and this year we're covering a different perspective of it. Last year, it's discussed about the Yom Teruah, the Day of Judgment, a day of time which God says, I will look at what you've done throughout the past year and see how well you have performed according to my commandments. Because unlike the spring feasts, the fall feasts symbolize you know what you're doing and you tried to do it. The spring feasts are you don't know what you're doing and you failed. It's okay. God will take care of that. The fall feast represents this. You do know what you're doing. You do know what he says and you tried to do it. And how well did you do? That's the nature of two spring, two feast time periods. So when it comes to fall feasts, we discussed a bit last year regarding how Yom Teruah, the Day of Trumpets, a great blasts, which of course discussed extensively in the New Testament, discussing trumpets and how they're used throughout the New Testament conversation regarding the last trump, which of course corresponds to the seventh one, and the various other details regarding in the Book of Revelation that discusses trumpets. We're not discussing that topic this year. Those of you who aren't familiar with Jewish tradition or belief, Judaism has a slightly difficult time regarding this particular day because unlike all of the holy days in the Torah, it gives you some reason for them. For example, do you know what the reason is for Passover? Right. An event happened. The angel of death passed over the houses. We get the idea of what Passover has a reason for it. For the days of unleavened bread, the Bible gives a reason for those. It tells you, oh, well, the dough wasn't risen while you were traveling. Therefore, for that reason, you will not eat leavened bread for the days of unleavened bread. A reason is given for the holy day. And of course, also for Shabbats, even though it's a days of rest, God worked the 6 days a week and he rests the seventh. There's a reason given for Shabbat. There's a reason given for Shavuot, the time which God had the counting of the Omer, the counting of the time for your first fruit harvests. These you harvest, they are mine. You will count them as mine. So you will count them all till Shavuot, which you will then come before me, all of Israel, and you will give your offering, your Shelemim offering, as a Thanksgiving party type offering on Shavuot for all these things that are mine. And of course, for atonement, we're given quite extensive reasons regarding atoning for one's sins, atoning for what your past mistakes. The goats are described how they're used. So we're given a lot of details regarding atonement. We're even also told the Torah for Sukkot, the Sukkot, the 7 days Sukkot, not the 8th day referring, just the 7th days, that God made the Israelites dwell in booths while they were wandering for 40 years in the wilderness and not having a permanent home. The 8th day is a little bit fuzzy because the only 8th day reference we were given is that it was so great during Solomon's time when he had the Sukkot being celebrated, they said it just spilled over. God was so pleased, people he wanted to keep on or attach on to us for an additional 8th day. But then, trumpets, Yom Teruah. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus 23 is not the first, but the primary reference for the Feast of Trumpets. Leviticus 23, starting in verse 23. It says, Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, In the 7th month, on the 1st of the month, there should be a rest day for you, a remembrance with great blasts, a holy convocation. You shall not do any laborious work, and you shall offer a fire offering to Jehovah. That's our first introduction. I have a question for you. Since I already told you all that the Holy Spirit is given a reason, some you're memorializing this thing, or memorializing that thing, or some event, and this says it should be a remembrance with great blasts. What are you remembering? What does the Torah tell you you're remembering? Deborah? Leaving Egypt? You could argue that. That's an idea, maybe. Well, we'll write some of these ideas down. This is not the what erase. No, okay. So, leaving Egypt, that's an idea.
Remember how he took Aaron?
Sorry, what was that? Remembering
wandering.
Remembering how they were taken care of and wandering. So, being taken care of. Oops, care. During their wanderings. Any other reasons why you think Yom Teruah is this? Yes, Deborah.
Remembering God.
Remembering
remember
God.
Remember who's God? Like, there was many gods in those days, and
oh,
he was
like,
the
which
one.
Was the, which God
he was the
theirs?
One true God, yeah.
All right, so remember the one God. One true God. Any ideas why Yom Teruah is given? Yes, Larry.
Sounds like he's going forward to the return of the king.
Returning of the king? Returning king for the idea of trumpets, the blasting or the heralding of a king showing up or a king moving forward. Returning of a king, trumpets here. Any other ideas why trumpets is honored? What you are remembering? Okay, ready for battle? That's an idea. Was it ready for battle? These are all good ideas. As I mentioned before, the Torah does not give an explicit reason for trumpets. It does not tell you, this is why you're remembering, or this is what you are to remember. You have to look, not deeply, but carefully, to spot what God's wanting from this particular holiday that we are to remember. So some of these are pretty good ideas. I do not know about all of them, but some of them are seem reasonable. So, let's go to another citation for trumpets is Numbers 29. Go to Numbers 29. Find Numbers 29. Numbers 29, this is also an additional description given for trumpets. Numbers 29, starting in verse 1. In the seventh month, on the first day of the month, there should be a holy convocation for you. You shall do no laborious work. It should be a day of great blasts for you. You shall make a burnt offering for a satisfying aroma to Jehovah. One young bull, one ram, seven male lambs, their first year unblemished. Their meal offering, a fine flour mixed with oil, 3/10 ephah for the bull, 2/10 ephah for the ram, 1/10 ephah for each lamb and the seven lambs. One of the male goats for a sin offering to provide for you atonement. Aside from the burnt offering of the new moon and its meal offerings, the continual burnt offering, its meal offering, and their libations according to their law. For a satisfying aroma, a fire offering to Jehovah. Is there anything in that description to give you any idea of what trumpets is for? Mind you, this is in Numbers 29 discusses mostly the sacrifices given for each different holy days. That's its dominant job for Numbers 29, what they're all for. Does it give you an idea of in that area what other things you're supposed to remember at all, or any ideas what it could be for? Yes.
The fall feast.
Beginning the fall feast.
I know, and it says it does not say that, but to believe that, to wake from our slumber and begin to repent and to turn and ask forgiveness for the things that we have committed over the past year.
That is a fairly common idea for what the sins of forgiveness before atonement shows up, because by atonement it's too late. You don't get forgiveness up to that point. Atonement, you've already been judged, theoretically. That's a good possibility. I'm not sure, a good possibility.
A calling for Messiah,
that's a good idea. I want to bring your attention to something regarding the day of Yom Teruah. Does anybody know what the word Teruah means? What kind of blast? Shout? Any what was that? Let's write the, no, it's not the one for war. So, a blast... Or shout. And what was the other guesses I heard? Was alarm, I heard? What else does teruah mean? Teruah. Any ideas? Okay. Let's go to Numbers 10. It defines the word for us. Numbers chapter 10 defines the word teruah, as well as the other words used for the different sounds given. So Numbers 10, chapter 1, the first 10 verses or so, discuss these particular items. Now, not these two ones. I mean, the symbol, these aren't that old, but the idea of silver trumpets is what Numbers chapter 10 is supposed to represent or discuss. These, of course, are not silver trumpets. They're like silver plated and they're made of multiple pieces and such. But the idea is that it's a silver trumpet. Not to be confused with shofar. Those are different. Shofars are ram's horns, which some of you have one. We brought them here today. Isaac's holding one up. They're ram's horns. The silver trumpets discuss shofars. Now, during the time of Messiah's reign, when he was alive, shofars and trumpets were intermixed. While during the Feast of Yom Teruah, how they were blasted and how their different sounds were given. We're not discuss all those details while he was alive. But it says, what does the Torah tell you these things are? Numbers chapter 10, starting in verse 1. Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, make for yourselves two silver trumpets. Make them hammered out, and they will be yours for the summoning of the assembly and to cause the camps to journey. When they sound a long blast with them, the entire assembly shall assemble to you to the entrance of the tent of meeting. If they sound a long blast with one, the leaders shall assemble to you, the heads of Israel's thousands. When you sound short blasts, the camps resting to the east shall journey. When you sound short blasts a second time, the camps resting to the south shall journey. Short blasts they shall sound for their journeys. When you gather together the congregation, you shall sound a long blast, but not a short blast. The sons of Aaron, the Kohanim, shall sound the trumpets, and it shall be for you an eternal decree for your generations. Now, those of you who look a little closely at those Hebrew words, the calling together, the long blast, verse 2, when it says, assembling the camps together, it's a mikra, to convoke or come to an assembly, to gathering. What they use? They use a long blast to blast that, a takah. A takah is a long, drawn out, as long as you can hold it type of a note of a blast, until your lungs fail you kind of thing. That's as long a blast as you can go. That's takah, to call people together. If you sound one, the leaders come. If you sound both of them, all the people come. But it's long, drawn out, never-ending blast. I'm not very good at it. If I was, I'd be blowing it. I'm not a trumpet player. However, in the other words there, starting in verse, let's see, actually, we'll skip a few verses here and go to verse 7. When you gather the congregation, you should sound the long blast, not a short blast. The phrase short blast in verse 7 is not the same as the phrase short blast in verse 5. Two different words. 7 is a ruah, not ruach, a ruah, R-U-A, a ruah. That's an alarm, a ruah, an alarm. That is when you, hey, we're being attacked, everybody. It's not the long blast, it's the ruah, the like when you have when the sirens go around with ambulances, they go up and down, a full spectrum. That's the alarm blasts. That's, you do not sound that when you gather the assembly. Let's go back to verse 5. Verse 5, it says, when you sound short blasts, the camp is resting, the east shall journey. That's not the same word as ruah. That is teruah. Teruah. What's today's name? Yom Teruah. Teruah. So, there is a tekah, which is a long blast, a ruah, which is an alarm, and a teruah, which is an advance. Move the camps out. We're moving. What is the name of today? Yom Teruah. So what is the day? The day of the movement. It's the movement remembrance. The Yom Teruah, the movement. Let's write that down. So I'm going to have, I erased this on the side, so it's good. There's these other sounds, the blasts of a shout, the way we define these, a blast or a shout. Oops, dang it, the wrong marker. I get rid of this thing. I don't like that. That's the wrong marker. That's a wet erase one. I didn't realize I had grabbed the wrong one. So the long blast, that's the tekah. Oh, that's a Q. I'll erase that. Try that again. This is a Q. T-A-Q-A, tekah. The alarm is a ruah, R-U-A. And then the traveling, the moving out of the camps, the travel or advance, is a teruah. Now, I'm not going to argue that the proper spelling of these are English transliterations of various words. So, the advance in particular, which is also known as a signal, and not just an advance, but a signal as well for moving of the camps. We learn in Numbers 31, this teruah is used, at least in another example, we have an idea of what of how they would use a teruah. Numbers chapter 31 discusses a little bit about this. So in the first six verses, it says, Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, take vengeance for the children of Israel against the Midianites. Afterward, you will be gathered unto your people. Moses spoke to people, saying, arm men from among yourselves for the legion, that they may be against Midian, to inflict Jehovah's vengeance against Midian. 1,000 of a tribe, 1,000 of a tribe, for all the tribes of Israel shall you send the legion. So there were delivered from the thousands of the children of Israel, 1,000 from each tribe, 12,000 armed for the legion. Moses sent them 1,000 from each tribe to the legion, them and Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the Kohen, to the legion, and the sacred vessels, the trumpets for teruah, in his hand. They amassed against Midian as Jehovah had commanded Moses, and they killed every male. So in the trumpets, the teruah, the advance, it's not just an alarm being attacked, but there could be variations on how it's done, but it's also advancing different districts of your army in the middle of a battle. It's a signaling. Hey, for example, I may have a particular number of notes that indicates the south move forward, or anything like that, as opposed to the other sections in the middle of a battle. So it's a teruah, it's a signal. It's an advance army or a signaling army. That's the point of the teruah's name, how it gets its name, how it gets its function. The alarm or the movement of it, not the alarm, the movement of the camps. So I have a question for you. Why? Why not have it a remembering of the trumpet itself? Or remembrance of something else? Why would God say, remember how you moved? Over them in clouds of fire? You know, the reason why you think that's a great answer. And the reason why you think why God would say, remember how you moved?
Because it's methodical order.
Methodical order? They did move in order. Let's discuss a little bit about the order which they moved in. Oh, I don't want to have to erase that again. It's wet. So I'm going to draw my little thing over on this side. So those of you who remember how the camps worked and how they were laid out, there were rules to God's movement. And the rules, of course, as you remember, there was the main marker's dried out. So much for that one. The main camp itself, It was centered around the tabernacle. Now I'm gonna draw a little compass up here. It's a north, south, east, and west up here. Just general what the map looks like. So don't forget. It's a rectangular shaped Mishkan, the temple itself, and how it was laid out. Those who recall, the Levites were immediately surrounding it. I have Aaron. I'm gonna draw this really small, but with A. Aaron was on the east side where the entrance was. Yeah, I drew my rectangle a little funny. Then there was Merari on the north side. These are the Levite households. I'm putting an M for Merari. There was a Gershon on the south side. I'm putting a G for Gershon. And then, that's the west side. South side was Kohath, K. Now you like see it from where you're at, but the point is the Levites were immediately surrounded it. And then also how they were camped, the rest of Israel was around that. So you had Judah and his companions. In this case, Judah was Issachar and Zebulun. I'm going to abbreviate with their letters, I and Z. And then on the south side was Reuben. And then you had his companions, which with him, under Reuben's banner, was Simeon and Gad. I'll read it with an S and a G for those two. And on the east side, there was Ephraim. And with him was Manasseh and Benjamin. And then on the north side was Dan. And with him, his two companions were, Asher and Naphtali. I'll read it with the letter A for Asher and Naphtali with the N. That's how the camps were laid out. Let's go back to Numbers chapter 10 and discuss how this process worked. Numbers 10 discusses where we just learned about how the trumpets were made and how they were used. No coincidence, God then shows you examples of how they actually used them. So Numbers 10, starting in verse 11. It was the second year, in the second month, the 20th day of the month, the cloud was filled from the tabernacle of testimony. The children of Israel journeyed on their journeys to the wilderness of Sinai, and the cloud rested in the wilderness of Paran. They journeyed for the first time at the bidding of Jehovah through Moses. The banner of the children of Judah journeyed first, according to their legions. And over its legion was Nachshon, the son of Aminadab. Over the legion of the tribe of Issachar was Nathaniel, son of Zohar. Over the legion of the tribe of Zebulun was Eliab, son of Helon. Then the tabernacle was taken down. The journey of the sons of Gershon, son of Merari, and the bearer of the tabernacle. Let's draw that real quick so we don't forget how our layout is working. I just lost our marker. There it is. So I'm going to erase some of these green, this green section of words so I can draw how they're moving. Now, there are a lot of arguments on how things move, but reality is the Torah is specific enough to give you what it looks like. So let's say they're going from point A to point B. That's the objective, right? First sign, who goes out first? No, the first one is Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. So I'll put a J, an I, and a Z, and these are this little group. That's the first group. That's the first blasting. That's the first teruah, the first advance. That group goes and that group travels. Following in between that, from them to the next group, following is the Levites, which is Merari and Gershon, and they have the actual tabernacle itself, the little rectangle shape that's with them. They have wrapped it all up. It's packaging. They have the boards with them. They're carrying them along. They're in this road traveling behind Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. They're, of course, traveling after them when it blasts out again. It's the south side. So Reuben, Simeon, and Gad then follow. So you have Reuben, Simeon, and Gad. They're groups of the Israelites following them in the path. Followed by them is, of course, Kohath, which is the next Levite. About K for Kohath. Now, with Kohath, he would carry the ark. He would carry the altars. That was their job to carry those things. The menorah, they're all carried out with Kohath. Along with Kohath, that's where Aaron and his sons are at. They're along with them because they are descendants of the Kohath line. So they are grouped in with them as they travel. When these are all different trumpets. So, for example, let's go back a little bit. This first was a first sounding. The second group was a second sounding. The third group is a third sounding. The fourth group is a fourth sounding. They're the fifth group. The fifth group, of course, is the east side. So we have Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin is a fifth group. And then the sixth group is the straggler, so to speak. Sorry to tell them that. It's Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. So that's how it's laid out as they travel from point A to point B. And God said, remember this. Why? Why? Why remember that? Does it matter if Reuben's here or here? Do I care? I might not know why, but God always does. So whatever the reason is, God knows why. We'll explain why later on. Don't worry. We'll get there. But God knows why. Ezekiel explains why, but we'll get to what the reason is. And the cloud is in front of all these guys. I'm going to draw a little funky cloud here. It's the one which we're all traveling and following. They're all going from this point to that point. That's all right. When they get there, they rebuild their little tabernacle and their camping site and have it all put up and ready to go again. That's a normal procedure. So, Numbers chapter 10, let's continue on where we were reading. I'm going to jump down a little bit because I don't want to read to all of the different men's names. I don't pronounce them very well. Let's see here. Let's see. Over to Dan Legion for 26. Hovav. Okay, and jump to verse 33 of Numbers chapter 10. And they journeyed from the mountain of Jehovah 3-day distance, and the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah journeyed before them a 3-day distance to search out for them a resting place. The cloud of Jehovah was over them by day when they journeyed from the camp. When the Ark would journey, Moses said, "Arise, Jehovah, let your foes be scattered, let those who hate you flee from before you." And when it rested, he would say, "Reside tranquilly, O Jehovah, among the myriad thousands of Israel." This is how they would ordinarily advance and move. The wind's blowing against my little thing here. So what would this process be? Why would this process be so important to God? To say, remember it. He made an entire holy day around the idea of movement. Any ideas why movement would still be so important? Yes.
It seems that there's a priest line with every group, like some that there are particular skills and abilities for each one of them.
Priest line. Explain a little bit more.
Is there like Judah and Issachar and Zebulun? Those are Judah's a priest. They're the ones that were around the closest of the.
The priests were the ones who were the closest. The priests, right. The Levites in particular, they're the ones right here in the center.
Right, but they all left us with. Groups.
They would travel right behind the groups. So,
right.
So, Merari and Gershon would be somewhat, I should argue, closely attached to the group of Judah because they immediately follow them as they're traveling in that way. Judah themselves weren't actually priests. Now, these two were actually priests, but the Levites would directly be followed right behind them. The priests would follow right behind them. So, why is movement so important? They made an entire holiday around it. Yes, Bill.
Part of that would be. His character.
His character. Explain. What do you think about his character?
Well, he's not just haphazard. You guys, do this and that. Help yourself. He's
organized.
Yeah.
He's organized. That is true. God is very organized. He has a purpose behind them. So this movement is an important concept because it is the one thing. Not the one thing. That's not fair to speak to say. It's one of the primary things that wasted 40 years of the Israelites' life wandering the wilderness. It's not the movement did, it's the lack of movement that wasted their time for 40 years. Let's go to how that spy encounter happened. So in the story of the spies, let's see, it's a chapter, Numbers chapter 13. I will not read the entire section of the story of the spies. I'm just going to give you some basic highlights of it. Numbers 13 and 14 is actually where it discusses most of them. So the spies, of course, were sent out. I'm going to go through all of chapter 13. That they were sent out to the land to inspect and examine what the land was worth and how good it was. And when they returned in verse 25, they returned from the springing of the land at the end of 40 days. They went and came to Moses and Aaron, the entire church of the assembly, the children of Israel, to the wilderness of Paran and Kadesh, brought back report to them and the entire assembly, and they showed them the fruit of the land. They reported to him and said, "We arrived in the land to which you sent us, and indeed it flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit. But the people that dwells in the land is powerful. The cities are fortified and very great. And we also saw there the offspring of the giant. Amalek dwells in the area south. The Hittite and the Jebusite, the Amorite, dwell in the mountain. And the Canaanite dwells by the sea and on the bank of the Jordan." Caleb silenced the people toward Moses and said, "We shall surely ascend and conquer it, for we shall surely do it." But the men who had ascended with him said, "We cannot ascend to that people, for it is too strong for us." They brought forth the children of Israel an evil report of the land that they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have passed to spy out is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people we saw when it are huge. There we saw the Nephilim, the sons of giant from among the Nephilim. We were like grasshoppers in our eyes, and we were as so we were in their eyes." So you have these two groups of men come back, Caleb, and of course Joshua is with him. They have one report about the place, the destination. I might roll a map here, point A to point B. The destination, where the cloud's heading us, where the cloud's dragging us to. "Hey, we have a report about where we're going, everybody." And there were 10 spies sent out, two different reports. What were two different reports? One said, "Let's go." What did the other report say? "Let's not go. We're not going to go. We will not go. It's too dangerous for us. We'll all die. Don't go." Now, if you are given the advance call to say, "Hey, everybody, we're moving out," what do you do? Do you say, "I'm not going"? Or do you say, "Yes, I'm going to go"? See, it's a memorial for our benefit. What are we called to do? When God says, "Hey, you or him or me, it's time to go, advance over there." I look over there, are you kidding me, God? Have you seen over there? Have you even looked? It's terrible. Look at it. There's no grass. There's no water. There's bad people. I'm not going there. Ah, I heard the advance and did I go? No, I didn't. That's a problem. Yes, David.
Well, it appears to me that there's, you know, also a direct correlation to, as far as the movement goes and the order that it goes. For example, you know, first to go, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. Okay, but it doesn't mention Moses and Aaron.
Explicitly is not mentioned there. No, their names are not listed.
So, but let me continue. And then second is Gershom and Mariah, which Mariah was part of Dan, Asher, and Natalia. Gershom was part of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. So if they're going before those two, then when they get there, there's some order to it. They're going to say, "This is our section. This is where we need to start doing this and setting up," so mm-hmm. that when they arrive, they've already scouted it out, have the place. It seems to
me it's ready to go.
And if you look at the chart that I've drew and how we went over it last time, it just appeared to me this time how, you know, when Kohath goes and you know, there, it's like before that tribe actually arrives, the leader of that tribe, or perhaps
some assembly is being structured already there, or ready for you. Yeah. And that's generally the idea of what would happen, because Judah, Issachar, they're the first ones to show up. But once the tabernacle is being constructed, by the time, once they get there, they start constructing the tabernacle. The rest of the tribes now say, "Oh, I see what tabernacle's set up. Division 7 through 12, you go over there. You know where your sections are because you're basically where the tabernacle is oriented." So you have a general idea of what's happening. That is absolutely true. The structure is built there. That's how the movement is supposed to work. And they're all continually following, of course, the cloud that's leading them to this destination. When the cloud stops, they stop. Whether it rests for a year or a day makes a difference, they stop in advance. But I want to point out to you, though, the people themselves have to be willing to go, don't they? Now, back when we covered this Torah portion a few months ago, I flippantly used this example. I did it on purpose. It was a flippant example. That, well, at this place, my wife and kids are happy because, look, we're right next to the creek and the stream. It's really pretty great water. The next place, oh, man, now he's got the stream and I don't. Now I have to go walk to get the water. I was happier at the old place. The idea of complaining, you preferred where you were. I use that as a flippant example because I was intending to use it here today. The same example, that the idea of you may be comfortable and like where you're at, but God's the one who says it's time to move. That's a hard thing to do. And I'm a person who likes to get stuck in the rut and I stay there. That's me. I don't like to change. I'm not a changing kind of person. My clothes, okay, but not much else. But generally, I don't like movement. I don't like change. I like things to always be the same. But that's not how God works, is it? How many of you have changed in your life? Changed direction, changed path, changed destinations. All of us have, haven't we? 10 years ago, do you imagine you'd be here? Some of you probably not. 5 years ago, probably some of you probably not. Me, okay, I've been here a long time. But the point is, but most of you, we didn't imagine where we would be, where we are now. What did God do? He said, you're moving. Go from here to over there. That's not easy to do, is it? Sometimes it's really hard. But my family stayed behind. It doesn't matter. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 1. This particular part we're heading to is also repeated in Numbers 32. It says the same thing. We're just to read it the way it's written on Deuteronomy real quick because I prefer its wording. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 36. I'll bring your attention to particular reasons, in particular how God speaks. Let's back up just a little bit. Verse 34. Yehovah heard the sound of your words. This Moses is recalling in the people's memory how did we get where we are and where have we been the last 40 years and why it took us so long to get to this point. So within this context of why he's discussing them, that they had rebelled and were not willing to travel to the point B, they said, I've seen that. It's too scary. I'm not going. Moses is trying to remind them of this. In the middle of it, he says in verse 34, Jehovah heard the sound of your words. He was incensed and swore, saying, If even a man of these people, this evil generation, shall see the good land that I swore to give to your forefathers, except for Caleb, son of Jephunneh, he shall see it, and to him shall I give the land in which he walked, and to his children, because he followed Jehovah wholeheartedly. So, amongst this crowd, imagine God says, okay, everybody, you're all here, and we're all going here. The whole crowd says, I'm not moving. But Caleb says, let's put a little C for Caleb. I'll go. Joshua, of course, was with him, which we read in Numbers 2. Joshua goes with him. So Joshua and Caleb says, we'll go. We're ready to go. We heard the advance. We're going. Just the two of them. So amongst the people, how many were the sons of God? How many were encountered amongst the sons of God, amongst these people? Two. Who were the rest of them? Not the sons of God. They were the children of Israel, but not the sons of God. Because what does a son of God do? Not a son of Israel. What does a son of God do? A son of God, what did Messiah do? He obeys his father's voice. He follows his father's direction. What his father says to do, a son of God, a son of father, he goes and does it. So, when God says, go to point B, everybody, Caleb and Joshua says, we'll go, and everybody else says, we're not going, who are the sons of God? Caleb and Joshua. My sheep hear my voice. They heard the voice of the advance. And everybody else heard it too, and everybody else said no. But they said yes. So in this remembrance of Yom Teruah, the day of advancement, what are we remembering? Well, what did Joshua and Caleb do? We're remembering to go. Be willing to go. That's a hard thing to do for some of us. Yes, Bill.
I like the scene how fast they get up and go if there's a flash flood coming.
If there's a flash flood coming, they'd get up and go a little faster. I'm sure they probably would. Yes, sir.
Well, I think it all, I mean, it all comes together, you know, with why we have to remember and why this would be such a glorious day of shouting is because the parallel is, you know, every time I tell you to move, to come closer to me,
you move.
Even though you may not like it, yeah. I'll still take care of everything.
Yep.
You may not have the stream next to your camp, but you'll still have water.
Uh-huh.
You may not have all the food you want, but you'll always be fed. Just keep coming closer to me and remember that this is what leads you to the promised land, to the kingdom. This is what you have to do. Follow me and obey.
Yep.
And that's what the whole beautiful picture is portraying, that even though they don't like it and they can look back at their past and the disobedience and what it caused every time they disobeyed, the plagues or the death or the earthquake or the, and
yep.
ultimately it finally led them to the promised land. Now, some of those that were disobedient didn't get there,
right.
but their children did. And it's a great lesson for all of us.
The, oh yeah, yes, Deborah.
I want to say that, Speedy Gonzalez, I just want to say that I think that's why all of us are here, because, maybe some people first came here, but I think we all come from churches, and I know how difficult it was. And when I moved closer, even to the Sabbath, the Sunday people said, oh, my God, this is the law. Oh, my God, you're, you know. And then when I went even up further and I heard to come here.
Torah,
and then people really thought, my mom's like, well, weren't you just fine where you were? And she's Jewish. Weren't you just fine where you were? And so when God calls us to this, at first you're questioning that. And so you hear, and then you move. And now I wonder what's next.
Well, that movement means something. We're going to jump to two more places before. Actually, I should do three, but we'll cover two. The third one we'll cover probably later on another holy day. Two more places. Deuteronomy 31. Now, this is an encouragement that was given to Joshua. Deuteronomy chapter 31, the first eight verses. Deuteronomy 31. This is regarding the idea of being willing to go. It's an important idea. Be willing to go. Moses went and spoke these words to all of Israel. He said to them, I am 120 years old today. I can no longer go out and come in. But Jehovah said to me, you shall not cross this Jordan. Mind you, stop for a minute. Was Moses willing to cross the Jordan? Absolutely. He begged to cross the Jordan. God said no. So God told Moses, I'm not giving you the advance. You're staying where you're at. You're not moving forward. Let's continue on. Verse 3, Jehovah, your God, he will cross before you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you shall possess them. Joshua, he shall cross over before you, as Jehovah has spoken. Jehovah will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorite, in their land, which he destroyed. And Jehovah gave them before you, and you shall do to them according to the entire commandment that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be broken before them. But Jehovah your God, it is he who goes before you. He will not release you, nor will he forsake you. That's an encouragement statement. Be strong. It's okay. The place you're going, it will be hard, but you will be okay. See 1 verse 7. Moses summoned Joshua and said to him before the eyes of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you shall come with this people to the land that Jehovah swore to their forefathers to give to them, and you shall cause them to inherit it. Jehovah, it is he who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not release you, nor will he forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be dismayed. So we are given the admission, the permission or the advance, go, be strong, be courageous, and go. That's a big deal, but that's a hard thing for humans to do, because it is our nature to be complacent and weak, but it's too hard for me, God. I'm happy where I'm at. That's the point. If you are happy where you're at, you are not like Joshua and Caleb, the sons of God. In Romans chapter 8, we're going to end today. Romans 8 discusses a particular concept. I want to make sure we all remember. Romans 8, which we've heard this probably thousands of times. It doesn't make much difference, but it doesn't hurt to hear it again. Romans 8 discusses this idea that when God told the spies to
sorry, when the spies told everybody to go, they gave two reports. God did something when that happened. That event did something. It revealed two individuals. Romans 8, verse 14. Now, mind you, your Bibles word this differently, but it's okay. Each of us have his words at variations on how this is worded. Starting verse 14 in Romans 8. For as many are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. All right, that's an important concept. Who is led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. Now, this groupings, who was being led by the cloud? Supposedly all of them, but who actually was following it? The only two sons of God, Joshua and Caleb. The rest of them weren't willing to follow. That's key one. Verse 15 of Romans 8. For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption by whom we cry out to our Abba, to Father. The Spirit bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. And if the children, then heirs, and heirs of God, and joint heirs with the Messiah. If indeed we suffer with him, then we may also be glorified together. So if long we're willing to go, now mind you, when Caleb and Joshua eventually inherit the land, what did Caleb have to go do? He had to go conquer Hebron. He's an 85-year-old man. And there are three main giants who live on that hilltop when he comes in. It's, okay, everybody, let's bring them on. How many of you are 85? Not one of you, I know that. Imagine what you feel now at your age, and now imagine you're 85 years old. And you're given a sword, and there are three large giants there who are bigger than you, stronger than you, probably younger too. And you say, okay, bring them on. And what does Caleb do? I'm just as strong as most. I was 40. Let's go. Let's go. I'm going to do it. That's what he says. I was 40 years old when I spied this out. It's been 45 years. I'm ready to do it. Let's do it. That takes some chutzpah there. To 85 years old. Okay. Let's continue on. If he's willing to go, it's an important thing. You're willing to go. Is it easy? No, it's not supposed to be easy. If Messiah was it easy for Messiah? No, of course not. Easy isn't the goal. It's the destination is the goal. See what in verse 18. For I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of all creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. So, the goal of all of this, the goal of trumpets, the advancement, is to reveal which ones, here's Caleb and Joshua, which ones are willing to follow. To identify who is the Son of God. Who says, I'm going to follow it. Is it scary? You better believe it. But who's willing to follow? That's the goal. So we think of Yom Teruah, the day of advancement. It's a declaration of blasting out. And we say, I hear the advance, and I'm willing to go. It's a big thing. It's not easy to do. It's hard. But the point isn't hard or easy. The point is just to do it. It's to be strong and courageous, as the instructions given to Joshua. Be strong and courageous. Just go. It looks worse over there, God. It doesn't matter. Go and be willing to go. That's an important thing to not forget. Yes, Deborah. Missionaries feel that when they leave the United States.
Yes,
leave
and the US? I know. Yes, to go somewhere. You know, my neighbors are not Christians, but they adopted a son from Africa and they're there now teaching. And so, I mean, they felt led and called, and I felt this willing feeling inside thinking, oh my good, they're you know, they don't know God well, and they have some kind of a spiritualism, but I thought, oh my goodness, what's it going to be like for them? And they're really going to come back changed, because they're going for 10 months and they kept their house. They own their house, but you know, they're over there being teachers, husband and wife and their two kids. So I know that being called somewhere as a missionary, that seems very overwhelming.
It does seem overwhelming. Certain people could do it, certain people can't. Sorry, that's not true. Certain people are willing to do it, certain people are not willing. It's not a can or can't, it's a willing or not willing. That's the defining mark. Because Caleb 85, he was still willing. It's not that he couldn't do it, or he could, it's just he was willing. Let's finish off this verse in verse 20. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. So creation is not willing to go do this, not willing to go pursue and do what God wants. It's not a willing thing. It's, what are the sons of God willing to do? What sons of God are willing to do? Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together all the way until now. And not they only, but we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. For we were saved in this hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For why? What's the hope what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, then we eagerly await for it with perseverance. Likewise, the Spirit also helps in our weaknesses, for we do not know what we should pray and as we ought, but the Spirit makes intercession for us with the groanings which cannot be uttered. He who searches his heart knows the mind of the Spirit is, because he makes intercession for the saints according to the will of God. We know that all things work together for the good of those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. For whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he predestined, these he also called. Whom he called, these he also justified. Whom he justified, these he also glorified. So the whole objective of how we're getting from point A to point B, it identifies who we are because we're willing to go. It matches our predecessor, our Messiah, who was willing to go. Was it easy? No. He's willing to do it. And the Spirit of God inside of us, what's it telling us? That's what's our conversation with God. That's what's talking to us. I don't have to hear him knock on my door and say, by the way, Daniel, or write a telegram, or write a letter, say, here, read this. I don't need that. It's the Spirit of God, the Spirit inside of it says, this is the time to go. Joshua and Caleb, they didn't need the trumpet to sound the advance to know they're supposed to go to the promised land. All they had to do is to know that that's where God wants us to go. I'm willing to do it. Is it easy? No. Would we have to be willing to do it? Yes. Is it more comfortable where, where we're currently at? Probably. Does that matter? No. The end goal is the objective. However we get there, the journey God takes on, that's okay. The end goal is the objective. I personally have no desire to wander for 40 years in the wilderness. It is not my thing. Some people may enjoy it. I don't want to do it. What do I want to do? God says to go here. Okay, I'll go. Is it easy? Is it scary? It's not easy. It is scary. But that's what the Son of God does. Goes. Does that make sense? Any questions? So the day of advancement, the day of trumpets, the day of Yom Teruah, we focus today primarily on the sound itself and what the sound meant. There's lots of symbols in the Day of Atonement, the Day of Trumpets. The trumpets themselves, the shofars, the different sounds. But I want to focus, get your attention focused primarily on the word Teruah, what it meant, and how it applied to us. Willing to go. You hear the advance, you hear know the destination, and go. Any questions? Any comments? All right. We're going to conclude with a prayer and a blast of our shofars and if those of you who have them, you can blast them. We're going to have trumpets up here as well. We're going to conclude with a prayer first. We need to hear our shofars blast, and may we hear them, and may they deafen us to everything else, just the voice of God. Let's end with a prayer. Almighty God, our great Heavenly Father, thank you for this holy day, our time with you, our time of great sounds, a great blasting, a great noise. For we hear you, Father, we will follow you wherever you lead us. You are our master, you are our creator, you are our guide. We are your sons, Father. Help us to always trust, to be strong and courageous, to follow, to not be afraid, to know you are there. You will not make mistakes. You will never let us go. We praise you, Father, to ask your blessing on this day of Trump's Yom Teruah. Amen.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L.info. Hallel.info.